Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to Chatting with Sherry. This edition sponsored by The Bewitched Continuum, the only book to explore the storylines, characters, and witchcraft of the classic sitcom Bewitched. Print and ebook versions available on Amazon.
Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Today we're going to welcoming back Mitzi Cerrito. She's going to talk about her new book, Florida Gothic. We're going to talk about her other adventures, her anthology, her TV channel, all kinds of stuff. Hi, welcome back, Mitzi.
Hi, Sherry. Thanks for having me back.
You've been busy since we last talked.
I'm trying to remember what we talked about the last time. Obviously, I had a book out, but I guess I always talk to you when I have a book out, and I have another book out.
It was a gothic. It was something gothic.
That yes, was, Florida
it
Gothic.
That, the cover with the lacy, the black lacy, that's what I remember. I remember clothes. The black lacy shirt.
Oh, yeah, maybe that was Darker Edge of Desire, Gothic Tales of Romance or something like that.
Yeah, something like that, yeah. Yeah, that was
God,
the last
that's really going back. That's ancient. You mean we haven't been on together in that long?
Yeah, it's been a while. Yeah.
Wow, okay,
so
well,
good,
yeah, there's
so
been a
lot
of
catch
things.
Up on.
Yes, we do.
You weren't doing a web TV show. Tell me about that. How did that start? What do you do? What kind of shows do you do?
Well, that is no longer happening. It's on indefinite hiatus. But, I was doing Mitzi TV, which was set in London and around London, England, not London, Ontario. It is. You do have to kind of specify sometimes because I do have people in Ontario that read me. But, yeah, that was just sort of a fun web TV channel. We did crazy things around London, different, Morris dancing, pub sing-alongs, biker groups, all kinds of stuff. But unfortunately, that is on hiatus.
I did you try to get the guards at Buckingham Palace to talk by making funny faces? And
Lucy Ricardo cornered the market on that.
I recently watched a travel show called, it was with an archaeologist, Josh, I can't remember his last name, but he tried to get the guy to talk to, maybe he was influenced by Lucy.
I think Lucy is somebody that has followed everybody regardless of what, their age, what generation they're from. She transcends all generations. So I think we all have Lucy to fall back on.
Oh, yeah. In fact, a couple of days ago was Desi Arnaz's birthday, and they had this picture of him, this video of him when he was cutest little boy you ever saw. I think he must have been 4 or 5 years old. He was on with Art Linkletter, and they said, "Who's the boss of the family?" And they said, he said, "My daddy." And he said, "Who's the prettiest member of the family?" "My mommy." And "Who's the funniest?" "My mommy."
Oh, that's cute. That's cute. Well, it's funny that we're even talking about them because I actually reference Desi Arnaz Sr. in my new book because it's set in South Florida. And, little Havana in Miami.
Yeah.
And, Desi Arnaz was an icon down there. And, he was around with his cigars and playing his dominoes in his old age. And
well, he actually went back because when he came from Cuba, that's where the family and when they escaped Castro, that's where they came to was Miami.
Well, everybody pretty much, yes.
He talked about it in his autobiography, which I did read.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I actually, I drew from a lot of that because, you know, most of my new book, Florida Gothic, is set in South Florida, and the main character lives in Little Havana, and he's a Cuban American, gentleman of, you know, older years. And, so it's just so funny because, I mean, we've actually got Desi Arnaz mentioned in the book.
That is so cool. Desi was, he was so much more than Lucy Straightman. I mean, he was an amazing guy, and I think that's good. I think he deserves to get mentioned in books. You know,
in this case, he's referenced as being this sort of handsome icon, and the character remembers when his late wife used to say he was as handsome as Desi Arnaz, which was a big compliment,
aww,
obviously, at that time.
Well, he was handsome. He was gorgeous. So I agree with that.
Calm down, Sherry. Calm down.
Well, no, I mean, God, he would have been my great grandfather's age. You know.
Probably, yes.
But then I had a crush on Cary Grant, and he was my grandfather's age, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but Cary Grant was Cary Grant. You know, he's another person that transcends everything, you know. He just epitomizes a lot of things. I mean, in his personal life, I think there were some dodgy things going on. But, you know, as a Hollywood actor, that's something different.
Well, he was just a really handsome man, really talented actor. And he was one of those people who even though he aged, he always looked handsome and elegant. He was very unusual.
Yeah.
Because he aged really well.
Yeah, a lot of people don't.
No. I mean, even people you think are going to, then as they get older to about Cary's age, that they're called the new Cary Grants, they don't age as well. Like, I love Robert Wagner. I still love Robert Wagner. But he did not age like Cary Grant did.
I think, you know, it's genetics. You're lucky with genetics, and also maybe looking after yourself, you know, not smoking, not drinking to excess, things like that, because that's what does it.
Yeah, that's true. And you never know. You never know. Never know what the body. Body's a very delicate organism, and anything can happen.
Well, or else you can just get lucky and have a portrait painted like Dorian Gray did. And, you know, I did the sequel on the, you know, The Wild Passions of Dorian Gray.
Too.
So we need a portrait. We need a portrait in the attic.
you wrote a Dorian Gray story, didn't you?
I'm sorry?
Didn't you write a Dorian Gray story?
I wrote a sequel.
Yeah, because I interviewed you about that too.
Okay. Yeah, that's, again, a few years back. But, yeah. I mean, that's always been a favorite book of mine and film as well. So, but, I mean, we're talking about aging and whatnot. Yeah, Dorian had it made. He knew he had the right idea.
Yeah, but it was sort of sad life. At the same time, I wouldn't want to be Dorian Gray. Not at all.
You know, Dorian may be doing it in a less awful way. Yeah.
He was. He also became one of the more corrupt characters in history.
This is true. Although I'm sure we have many who are far worse that are nonfiction.
Yeah, I can name a few, but I won't.
Yeah, let's not go there.
No.
No controversy on today's show.
No controversy on Chatter Sherry. Well, not that kind of controversy.
Exactly.
We can have controversy, just not that one. What? You said Dorian Gray was one of your favorite books. What other books was an influence on you as both a young woman and as a writer?
I'm not going to really say any books necessarily influenced me. There were just books that maybe I enjoyed reading, but I mean, there's been so many because I've been an avid reader since early childhood. So it would probably be impossible to really dredge everything up. So I'm not sure I can really answer that. It's just certain books have caught my fancy, and you know, The Portrait of Dorian Gray was one of them, and Lolita by Vladimir Nabokov is a book that I just think is completely amazing, but it didn't necessarily influence me.
I didn't mean that. I just meant, okay, take influence out. Make it inspired.
I'm not sure I could even say inspired because, I mean, I've read so broadly and so many kinds of things. I mean, I mean there will be periods I'd go through where I would read certain kinds of books. I mean, I was on, for instance, once I was just reading everything I could that was like literature from India, people who were, expats or refugees from India. I went and read a bunch of Russian novels. I read a bunch of African American authors, you know, pretty much everyone I could, Alice Walker, Toni Morrison. So it goes in spurts. Then I caught up on books that were written in the early 20th century that I'd never got a chance to read, like The Jungle, An American Tragedy, books like those that were totally brilliant. So I don't know if they necessarily inspired me, but I think as a writer, you know, reading broadly is really important and helps you with your writing. Definitely.
Absolutely. I think when the most lush periods of writing, all writing, it would be the 1920s. There are so many great novels came out in the 20s. My personal favorite is The Great Gatsby, but, I mean, there's Hemingway, there's George Eliot,
Gatsby. I don't know how many times I had to read that. First, I had to read it in high school. I had to read it for a college course. Then it resurfaced again at some other college course. I could never get rid of Gatsby.
It's funny because I never had to read it for school. I just like the book. I guess. I got lucky with that one. I had to read stuff like The Red Badge of Courage, which sorry to anybody who loves that book. I hate that book because I had it in junior high and high school. They made me read it twice.
Oh, dear. Well, yeah, I know. But, yeah, Gatsby just kept showing up. I don't know. I couldn't get away from Gatsby.
But then sometimes you read a book and that was a sign that you like. There's one that I fell in love with, which was Les Mis. And that was a sign when I was in college. And I thought, oh, it's so sad and so tragic, because I knew what the basic story was. But I actually read and fell in love with it. So you never really know. Even book assignments can be something that's good. It forces you to read something you wouldn't normally read.
Yeah. The only painful part is if it's something you seriously do not want to read, and then you have to go and analyze it in a paper.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I like some of Poe's work. Like, I like the Rue Morgue and stuff like that, but I had to read I forgot the name of it, The Pendulum?
The Pit and the Pendulum?
Yeah, I think that's it, The Pit and Pendulum.
Yes.
I was not one of his books I liked, and I had to read it for school, and I felt really bad because I did like him, but I didn't like that one.
Well, I'm just grateful I managed to escape having to read War and Peace.
I saw the movie with Audrey Hepburn, but I never read the book.
as your time gets more limited and your patience gets more limited, reading anything of that size isn't going to happen anymore.
Well, also, Dostoyevsky.
Well, you know, I just have to. I find it astonishing that an author can even write something of that size. I mean, even Stephen King, when you look at some of his novels, I mean, oh my God, how the hell did you manage to write something that lengthy, you know? I mean, I used to actually write lengthier things when I first started out in my professional writing career, and it seems as if I, you know, I'm kind of going in the other direction now, although perhaps that's actually timely, because I think people are actually looking for books that are maybe not going to be a commitment of weeks and weeks and weeks to slog through. They want something that is, they can read it in, you know, shorter period of time.
It's funny because if there are some books that are big that you don't even notice it's big because you're so into the story that there's no way that there's some books that were really big that I would get the worst eye strain and headache from because I couldn't stop reading it. I would read it at night and keep reading it even though I had to get up for work the next day and But then there are some books that's a torture. And, I mean, it depends on the book. And it depends on the author. And it depends how much you're into the subject.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. But again, it is often an issue of time constraints. And I think that's, I think perhaps that's even some reason why the e-books are popular and the e-readers are popular, because people could just sort of take things on the go and have lots of things there to look at, you know, if they're on the train or on holiday or you know, sitting in their doctor's office waiting for their appointment. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I think the shorter bites are becoming a lot more popular. I mean, if you look at films, too, do you remember films used to be at least 2 hours long, and I mean, now there's films, they're not even an hour and a half. They're like an hour and 15 minutes. And it's just as if we're all shifting toward this shorter bites of entertainment.
I don't know that's necessarily good.
Maybe not. But I mean, our lives are just busier and busier and more complicated. There doesn't seem to be a way to simplify anymore. Life is just too complicated in Western society, and people are pulled in so many directions, and their time is frittered away with often quite nonsensical things that they must do. So there's just the free time is just harder and harder to find.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I understand. I mean, and there are times when I would like to be able to read more or just relax and watch a movie when I have to take it in bits and pieces, like when I have I'm eating or something like that. That's when
exactly.
I watch a movie. But I don't know if that's good. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm saying that I understand what you're saying. I'm just saying mentally, emotionally, I don't think that's good. I think you need time to relax and take a break and do more than just stuff your face and watch TV or stuff your face and read a book. You need to be able to just relax.
But how many people have that? Yeah,
I know.
I'm just
not saying that. I'm just saying it's not good.
Yeah. Well, it isn't good, but it's sort of it is what it is. As the horrible. I hate that expression, but it is what it is. I always say that's the realtor's expression. It is what it is. Every realtor says that.
Oh yeah. Well, that's not good there.
And
they're saying
that
you want to run the other way.
Now listen, as long as people are still reading books, that's all that matters.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and then in a world where some people rather play a video game than read a book, I'm happy that people are still buying my books.
Exactly. I know. I don't care if they need to read it, like, you know, at the doctor's or if they're sitting on the loo. I don't care. Just buy the book and read it. Get something from it. Enjoy it. That's what, you know, have an experience from it. That's all I'm asking.
But the thing is that really saddens me is that people don't realize books are a great thing because you can be and do and go places you'd never really be able to in real life. It's an extension of yourself that you cannot have in any other way. And even movies can't do that. TV shows can't do that. Not like a book can, because it's your imagination alone. It's all in your head as you're reading it. And it's so good for you. And it's such an important thing. I mean, it makes me sad that people don't see it that way. They see it as torture or something that they have to do. And I'm like, don't look at it like that. That's not what, if you don't like to read something that you got in school, pick up a book about something you do like. Like if you like football, read, I forgot the name of it, the one with Brian Piccolo Brian Song. That's all about football. It's all about football, but it's got a real story and brings your compassion out and there's something there. I'm just saying, because you think you don't like to read, try something. It is in the realm of what you love. Even gaming, there's books that are novels that have key characters are about gaming. Expand yourself.
I sometimes think that our schools are designed to kill any love or inspiration we might have for something. You know what I mean?
I know.
Instead of getting people to think and experience and create, it's doing the opposite, and it doesn't seem to be getting any better.
I know. I when I was working at as a customer service rep, one of my little tricks to get the younger people around me to read was at the holiday time when we, you know, you do the book exchange, I would be giving them books, but they would be books about something that they're crazy about. But it worked because one guy, he said, I hate reading. I never read. And he loved baseball, and I gave him the book of Field of Dreams, and he had seen the movie, and he mentioned that he loved the movie. Next time I saw him, I hate the book, but he was reading a book. He read Jane Austen and the Vampire Slayer or whatever the heck it's, Pride and Prejudice and the Vampires or whatever it's called.
Oh,
but he was reading.
Fun. Yeah, I think it's just not as encouraged anymore. And if people don't get encouraged in school or perhaps in their home with their family, you know, if books aren't a part of their life, then it's something foreign to them and they miss out on a lot. And I'm not just saying that because I need to make my living selling books. But I just can't imagine a life without reading. You know, I just can't.
Okay.
I always think of that episode of The Twilight Zone where that guy, you know, the everything comes to an end. The fellow at the library, and he just can't wait. This is it, man. I'm just going to read. And then his glasses break. And I think, would be the ultimate torment. Yeah.
Yeah, he has this big, huge stack of books. It's the end of the world, like a nuclear holocaust. I love
Rod Serling.
Yeah,
oh, he was brilliant, man. Totally, totally brilliant. That stuff, again, transcends time. It's as good now as it was when it was created. It's not, like, dated or silly, you know?
Oh, no. I mean, that's my favorite was called Two. It's with Elizabeth Montgomery and Charles Bronson, and they're on opposite sides of like a Holocaust kind of war, and they follow. It was a love story. It was Adam and Eve. It was the most beautiful Twilight Zone I think I've ever seen.
I don't remember that. I think I would with Charles Bronson and Elizabeth Montgomery. That's an interesting combination there.
And she didn't say.
And you know,
she said
Charles Bronson is a fellow Russian. You know.
Russian.
Yeah.
No, she's Charlie Bronson was the American, and Elizabeth Montgomery was the Russian.
Okay, but I mean Charles Bronson was of Russian descent.
Oh, I know.
Know
I know. But in
okay.
in the show, he was the American. He's the one who spoke English. Elizabeth Montgomery said one. I think she said one word, and it was in Russian. But she was in the whole episode.
Yeah.
It was romantic.
That was an interesting show. Yeah. I've not seen that episode. I'll have to keep an eye out for that one.
Oh, beautiful. But But that's the kind of writing that I wish I could see on TV. It's just so much intelligence and these weird twists, and you never know if it's going to be comedy or romance or tragedy or farce, because they did all of it. It was one of my favorite shows.
Yeah.
We're at the point where I want you to give a nice plug for your book. So tell what you'd like to tell about your book and where they can get it, and if you have any events or anything coming up where you're going to do a signing or an online event.
Well, I just actually did a book signing the other week at a lavender farm, so you're too late for that one. But right now, yeah, Florida Gothic is the new book, and it's just come out it's out in ebook and in trade paperback. It's a horror novel, and it's a new series. The series is called The Gothic Series. I'm really excited about it. I mean, each book will be a self-contained story, but they'll be, as I say, part of this series. Florida Gothic's actually about the protagonist is Ernesto, who is as I mentioned to you, a Cuban-American gentleman, a retired gentleman who lives in the Little Havana area of Miami. And one day he's on his way home, and he is run over by a Hummer. Followed by partially mauled by an alligator that was lurking in a canal nearby. And he dies, but he's not quite dead. Essentially, he does make his way home, and he starts reflecting about all the injustice that's happened in his life, and he decides to start doing something about it. So it's got revenge, and it's got gore, and it's got some humor, and it's got some really gritty characters.
Wow. Sounds like a nice and twisty story.
Yeah, I mean, I really am happy with how it ended up coming out, because I never know where a book's going when I start writing it, and it just fell together really well. You know, I've had some really good feedback from people who are in the horror industry, including Peter Straub, who gave me a wonderful blurb for the book. He's pretty high up there on the ladder of horror iconic authors, and I'm really excited. I'm actually already working on the next novel in the series, which will be New Mexico Gothic, which I actually thought I'd write first, but somehow this one just insisted on being written before anything else.
That's so funny. Isn't it weird how books just kind of, you have your own mind of what you want to do, but the book wants to do what it wants to do.
Exactly. It had a life of its own, and it said, I'm sorry, but you have to write me first. And I'm like, all right, I don't want to argue with you. I've had that happen before. It's not like that common, but this was a very strong-minded book. Strong will.
It's the muse. The muse makes you do what it wants to do.
Yeah, yeah. So
and all writers have that.
Well, I mean, it's just weird because, I mean, I keep telling people I've been 3 years behind on my book projects, and now I'm 2.5 years behind, so I feel like I've really accomplished something now. Because I have things I keep getting shuffled away, like poor Teddy, you know, my bear Teddy Tetalu. We've been, for the last 2 years, we've been wanting to get our next Thelonious T. Bear Chronicles novel written, and I'm afraid I have to keep shuffling that to the back of the deck because other things are coming out.
Aw, and is Teddy mad about that?
He's not a happy bear. No, he's not too happy, and a lot of his readers aren't either, because they're like, "Where's the next Thelonious T. Bear book?" I'm like, Teddy, I'm sorry, we have to wait. I have to do my horror series. Sorry.
So is he patient?
No.
Okay.
He likes to complain a lot on social media. I have a really bad reputation as a horrible cook, and many other things he likes to complain about. But what can you do?
Oh, poor Teddy. He has to suffer.
Well, you know, You know what? I got our photo. My photo on the back of the book has him with me in the photo. So I mean, it's not as if he's being shunted aside.
True. And I've been using the photo with you and him, so he should be a happy little boy.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, you're definitely in his good books, so to speak.
He's on Instagram and all over the place, so he's he's all over.
Facebook, Twitter. Yeah, his Instagram account never worked. He signed up for it, and every time he tries to access it, they tell him he doesn't exist. And meanwhile, then he tries to sign up with a new account, and they say, well, your name's been taken. He's not happy about that either.
Oh, poor Teddy.
I know. It's tough being a bear, right?
Yeah, it is. Like, it's almost like being a frog.
A frog?
Kermit.
I don't know about that. Oh, okay.
Kermit.
Yeah, but Kermit probably has a lot better royalties than Teddy does.
And that's true. Kermit has a TV show and movies.
Yeah, Ted's working on it. It's just things are slow go around here.
Yeah, poor Teddy. So you don't have any events that are coming out that you want to, ones?
I mean, other than doing interviews like what we're doing right now, nothing in particular. Since I've been in the States, I don't do a lot of live events. I'm kind of, very, very choosy on those for many reasons, which I won't go into. But, so it's just me. You'll find me on Facebook and Twitter, and, you know, you can see what I'm up to there. And it'll be like we're together, even though we're not.
Okay. All right. We've come to the end of the interview. Thanks for coming back on the show. I hope you enjoyed it.
Thank you for having me back, and I guess I'll speak to you when I have another book out.
Okay, great. Thank you. And thank
well,
you for
I'm hinting.
I know. I got it.
Okay.
And thank you for chatting with Sherry.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye.